Okay, good morning, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Welcome back to Five to Go, Parshas Vayetze 5783. Our learning today is sponsored by the nieces, nephews, and grandchildren of Mr. Ronald Markowitz, my great uncle, in memory of our dear uncle and grandfather, Reuven Ben Baruch, and by the Heiser family to commemorate the yahrzeit of Freddie Heiser, Meir Ben Yehuda Levi Zal, father of Judy and David Heiser, and the yahrzeit today of Reuben H. Ullman, Ruby, I believe they called him, Reuven Ben David, Ben David Tzvi, the father of Linda Heiser. Their neshamos should have an aliyah, the Gan Eden Shel Mala. Parsha Vayetze is an action-packed Parsha. We start as a single person, with Yaakov, yes. Vayetze Yaakov, Vayelech Charana, and we emerge at the end of the Parsha with the Shvatim. Almost all the Shvatim, Midas of Binyamin, but essentially we emerge now as almost a nation, essentially. We're slowly growing in numbers from an Avraham to a Yitzchak to Yaakov to, wow, look at this with Rachel and Leah, Bilhah and Zilpah, and many, many children. Yaakov is also in Gullus, this entire parsha. The entire story and the entire Rav Chaim Chochmel points out that the entire story of Vayetze is stuma. In the Torah itself, there are absolutely no breaks in the entire Parsha Vayetze. It might be one of only two Parshas in the entire Torah that has no breaks in the Parsha itself. And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz points out the reason is because this Parsha is the gullus, the exile of Yaakov Avinu, and because it's the exile of Yaakov, we can't stop in the middle to say, hey, why did this happen? The point of a stoppage of play in the middle of a story in the Torah is so Moshe could stop and think, so we can stop and think and reflect on what happened previously. When a Jew is in Gullus, it's very hard. We can't stop and think in the middle because we have to look at the whole picture in totality to understand how everything is all connected one to the next, achad l'sheni. Without that, it's very difficult to do that. Okay, so let's begin. Yaakov is on the run, or we began already, theoretically, but Yaakov is on the run, and Torah tells us he's going to Haran, v'yifka b'makom, and he approaches the place. What place does he approach? According to most Mefarshim, he is approaching the place of Har HaMoriah, the future site of Har Habayis, the future site of the Beis HaMikdash, where Avraham Avinu brought his father Yitzchak. And he approaches this place and says, I need to daven here. Yaakov, we learn, was misakin tfilas mariv in this place. And the Torah tells us, vayishkav b'makom hahu. He falls asleep. Before we get into what he sees in his dream, the Torah tells us that he slept in this place. Why is he sleeping in this place? And why does the Torah need to tell us this? The Torah doesn't always tell us that the Avos or Imahos woke up or fell asleep. And when they do, there's something significant that they must be sharing with us in this moment. So says the Gemara, says Bracious Rabbah. Part of this is in Rashi, but it's good to see the whole gamut here. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia. They have a machlokas as to why exactly the Torah needs to tell us that Yaakov was sleeping in this moment. Kan shachav, avakol yudal shanim shaytamim beis ever lo shachav. This opinion is the opinion we are most familiar with. It's quoted by Rashi. Rabbi Yehuda says, why is he sleeping here? The Lamedcha to teach you that for the 14 years previously, prior to this, he was learning in Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever, and Yaakov Avinu didn't sleep at all. When he was in Yeshiva learning Torah, he didn't sleep at all. And right now, the day before he meets his eventual wife, Rachel, he falls asleep at the Makom HaMikdash for the first time in 14 years. Rabbi Nechemia Amar, that's that we are more or less familiar with. Rabbi Nechemiah continues in the Medrash and says, Kan shachav, aval kol esrim shana sh'ama bebeisel shalavan lo shachav. Here he slept, but for the next 20 years that he lived in the house of Lavan, he didn't sleep. Okay? So they have a machlokes about when Yaakov did sleep. Everybody agrees, Tor says. But when didn't he sleep? Is this referring to the time Kodem, before this? Or in the future, he didn't sleep? So what do we make of this Medrash? What is the meaning of this Medrash? So says the Menachem Tzion, Rabbi Tzion Zaks, great Rav in Chicago. The first two ideas are going to come from him this morning. He says the following. What keeps us up at night? You know, if anything, some of us, and it's a bracha to sleep straight throughout the night, but you reach a certain age and that doesn't really happen that much anymore. What keeps us up at night? So if you think about it, Yaakov Avinu is at this moment running away. He's hungry. He's starving. He's got nothing in his pockets. He was just attacked and, you know, money was stolen and taken away from him. And right now in this moment, he is in the nature. He's in the wilderness on a mountain. And here he's trying to sleep. Of all the places where you think that he dafka wouldn't sleep, whether it was Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever before or in Lavan's house, you would think when he's in physical danger from the elements, he would stay up the entire night to protect himself, lest a bear, a fox, a wolf, you know, can come and attack him. That didn't bother Yaakov. Yaakov was not afraid for his physical life. He wasn't concerned with that. He did what he needed to do. The psukim say that he had the rocks that went around him and that served as a protection to him. And that didn't keep him up at night. He wasn't concerned about that. But what kept him up at night? One of two things. And that's the machlokes here. Talmud Torah. And when you have the ability to learn and connect to Torah, you just can't go to sleep. How can you go to sleep? I got to learn a little bit more. How can I go to sleep? Or he didn't sleep in the house of Lavan. Why didn't he sleep in the house of Lavan? He was concerned not about his physical life, but he was concerned more about his spiritual life. And if he slept for a moment and he got too comfortable in Lavan's house, he would be afraid that he would succumb to the whims of a Lavan. And he would be encapsulated in the whatever Lavan was selling. And he was too afraid of becoming too comfortable in Lavan's house. We see here very clearly where Yaakov's priorities were and what he was concerned about in his life. What kept him up at night? Talmud Torah and his spiritual safety, not just for him, but he was concerned about his family. Now that he had a family in Lavan's house, he needed to think about them. And not for one moment did he want to become comfortable. And you think about it for yourselves. What's ruminating in our heads at night? What types of anxieties keeps us up at night? And it says a lot about us and what our values are and what we care about. Yaakov, Torah, spirituality, those were the two things that were on his mind. We have to ask ourselves what was on ours. Okay, that is thought number one. Continuing on, there's a fascinating halacha, or not a fascinating halacha, there's a halacha, fascinating where it comes from, that on Tisha B'Av, we should only sleep with one pillow. Or you should really limit what you have. The halacha is on Tisha B'Av that if you sleep with three pillows, you should sleep with at least two. Two pillows, one pillow. One pillow, no pillow. You should be a little bit more uncomfortable on Tisha B'Av than you are the rest of the year. Now, where does that concept come from? The halacha come from? So says the Rama in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, And I heard this idea so beautifully from one of my rebbeim from high school, Rabbi Naftali Besser. And he says the following. The Rama says, where do we get this concept that you should sleep on one pillow on Tisha B'Av? And you could just say, it's very simple. You should be uncomfortable on Tisha B'Av. That's a halacha. The Rama says, we learn it from Yaakov Avinu and Parshas Vayetze. When Yaakov Avinu went to sleep, what did he do? He had the Avanim. He had the Avanim. And he slept on a rock. Right? So Yaakov slept on a rock by the Makom HaMikdash. It must be that he was, and we, I think the Chazal point this out, he knew this was going to be destroyed one day. And he slept there to highlight that the eventual destruction, to show a little bit of pain and suffering. But he slept on one rock. And that's the simple understanding of the Rama and what's happening here in the story. And in the previous years in Tisha B'Av, we emulate Yaakov Avinu by sleeping with one pillow, not with a rock. In fact, some people, I think, do put some rocks, that's quoted also, underneath the pillow. But he, Rabbi Besser, took this one step further and said a deeper message here. Maybe what the Rama means is one step further. The psukim say that Yaakov had avanim. He put avanim around his head to protect him. However, by the morning time, they were no longer referred to as avanim. They were referred to as an evan, as a rock. What does it mean, a rock? That they all fought with each other. Whose head is, whose rock is Yaakov actually going to lie on? And they fought about it. Which tzaddik is going to have, which, you know, rock is at this chus to serve this amazing tzaddik. And they all combined together, right? It's a fascinating story. It's an interest that we all learn as young children. But and they all eventually combined together to become one rock. They were many, they became one. And he says, maybe that's the deeper message here of what we go to sleep with on Tisha B'Av. It's a message not just of discomfort, but it's a message of unity. We all have, you know, multiple opinions. We all want to be the one that's right. We all want to be the one that gets to serve the tzaddik. We all have varying approaches and ways that we feel are correct in our service of Hashem. But ultimately, we need to be unified in our, you know, approaches in life. It doesn't mean we need to have different same opinions. It doesn't mean we need to live life the same way or dress the same way. But when it comes down to it, there needs to be a sense of unity. And maybe that's why we sleep with one pillow, to remind us of this message on Tisha B'Av, something that we learned from Yaakov many years earlier. It was a brilliant idea. Okay, so now we have Yaakov sleeping, the pillow Yaakov used, right? We're going very slowly through the parsha. And now the dream. Yaakov has a dream, a prophetic dream, where he sees a sulam mutzavarza. He sees a ladder that is firmly planted in the ground, the rosho magia hashamayma, and the head, the top of the ladder, is in Shemayim, and there are malachei Elokim, there are angels, olim v'yordim bo. This is not what we're going to talk about today, but I want to mention this. It's one of my favorite ideas from the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes says, you see from here an insight into Shalom Aleichem that we say every single Friday night. What's the insight? We begin Shalom Aleichem by saying, welcome to the angels that escort us. The Gemara says that the angels escort us when we go home from shul on Friday nights. Shalom Aleichem, and then we say, Balachem l'shalom, may you enter in peace. Baruchuni l'shalom, bless us in peace. And then we say, Tzeischem l'shalom, we say goodbye to them. Says the Sfas Emes, why do you say goodbye to the angels? Wouldn't we prefer that the holy Shabbos angels stay with us the entire year? Or the entire Shabbos, sorry? Why would they leave? Doesn't make sense. So he says the following. The Pasuk tells us that the Malachi Elokim are Olim, the Yordimbo, right? They're going up and going down. The Malachim should go down first from Shemayim and then go up. Why would the imagery of the Torah give us that they were going up first and then down? He says, Rashi tells us, because there was two sets of angels. Yaakov now was leaving Eretz Yisrael. So the angels that were escorted him to the borders of Israel were the angels of Eretz Yisrael. And when he left Eretz Yisrael, then there were new angels that were coming down to protect him when he left and was on his way to Haran. You see here that every location has different angels, depending on the Kedusha level of the place. That's commensurate to the level of the angels that you receive. So he says here something so beautiful. So tomorrow night, when you sit down or stand up, when you're saying Shalom Aleichem, we happen to stand up, but all is good. And you say Shalom Aleichem, Boachem L'Shalom, Barchuni L'Shalom. And they say Tzitzchem L'Shalom. Who are you saying Tzitzchem L'Shalom to? Says the Svasemis, based on this idea from Yaakov Avinu, you're saying goodbye to the angels of the week. You say, I don't want any weekday mess over here. I don't want them here. You say goodbye to them, and you keep the angels of the angels of Shabbos stay with us the entire week. So an extra piece for today, a beautiful thought. The Baal HaTurim over here, the Baal HaTurim was the son of the Rush, Rav Yaakov ben Asher. And he says the word Sulam, Samech Vav Lamed Mem. Okay, Mendy's not here yet, but he's not back yet, but he'll have to tell him this gematria. The gematria of Sulam is Mammon. Is Mammon. Mammon means money. So what in the world, right, is the connection here between Sulam, the ladder that Yaakov sees in this dream, and Mammon and money? How do we connect these two ideas? So says the Menachem Sion the following: Kol shinoi b'matzavo akakali shel adam me'oni la'osher me'osher la'oni ma'amido b'fanav nisayon gadol. Any change in financial status is a nisayon. Yaakov Avinu, at this moment, he left his parents' house. According to most, Yitzchak and Rivka were very comfortable. Yaakov leaves with a lot of money in his pockets, and he is robbed, and he has nothing left. In next week's Parsha and Vayishlach, we're told that he leaves, Kibamakli Avartias Yerdin Hezah, he had nothing in his pockets, nothing to his name except for the stick in his hands. That was Mamish It. He goes to Lavan's house, and in Lavan's house, he becomes extremely wealthy, spiritually, physically, and familially. With, he has a big family now. So the message that is given to Yaakov here is that understand that just like a ladder, it's very easy to go up the ladder and down the ladder. You are going to go through tests. Are you going to be the same Yaakov Avinu when you're going to encounter extreme personal wealth? Are you going to have the same goals and personal connections in life? Are you going to have the same Torah values now that you have achieved a certain level of wealth? It is all up to you, Yaakov, right? It's all up to you. That is the Nitzayon, and that's Olin V'Yordim Bo. People go up, and the same people go down. You see people that fail with they call it affluenza in our world, and some people do wonderfully, right, regardless of what they have. They lost it all, but if they gained a tremendous amount, it should not change our values one iota. It may give us more opportunities, open more doors, but that should be it. Okay, that is thought number 3 for this morning. Let's go to the end of the parsha. The end of the parsha, Yaakov Mazel Tov has several wives at this point. He has many children, and he leaves. And he leaves, Lavan chases him, right? After 20 years of living in this house, and Lavan driving him nuts with all these deals and what exactly he gets to keep, what the other people get to keep. He leaves, and At the end, we know the story of Rachel is hiding the idols of her father. She's not so happy with him. But ultimately, Yaakov and Lavan make a bris between the two of them, Galeed. And the Torah tells us the following. Vayashkev Lavan baboker. Lavan wakes up the next morning. He stayed with them. It was like a nice moment at the end of this story. Vayinashek Lavanav vilivnosav. He kisses his children and his grandchildren, sons and daughters, goodbye, and he blesses them. And he goes and he returns home. And Yaakov goes also, continues on his way, and Malachim approach Yaakov, right? Yaakov has Malachim in the beginning approaching him, and Malachim at the end. Says the Meshech Chachma, Vayashav Lavan limkomo. Lavan returns back home. It doesn't just mean that Lavan returns back home. Lavan returns to the same Lavan that he was this entire time. Kimishi yeshlo ish kadosh ki Yaakov besoch beso. Loi roi lis basem mi ma'asav mi chachmaso ulokayim bo. Haloch at chachamim v'chacham. Lavan had a tremendous opportunity here to connect, to be inspired, and to learn from a Yaakov Avinu. He had Yaakov living in his house for over 20 years. The Torah is testifying here that Lavan gained zero from this experience. He gained nothing from this opportunity. And ultimately, at the end of the day, he was still a Lavan. He was still a Lavan. And that within itself is so sad. It's a sad ending to the story from Lavan's perspective. He's saying we should be sad for Lavan that he never took advantage of the opportunities to learn from Yaakov, even though Yaakov was in his midst the entire time, right? Yaakov, it's unbelievable, was never affected by Lavan. And he even got stronger in his personal Avodas Hashem and in his Torah. But Yaakov, but Lavan did not learn from him. And too often in life, we have like experiences where we feel, oh, if I would have done this again, I would have gained more. Or we have people in our lives that we just would have wished that we could have spent more time with. We could have asked them all of those questions and been more affected by them. But because we're rushing or we have too many things on our plates, or because we don't prioritize the right way, we end up being yashav limkomenu to our places, and we never ultimately connect with these places and don't let them inspire us. And that is so important for all of us. What's amazing is that the Ksav Sofer writes that why is it that Avraham is insistent that Yitzhak should find a wife from Haran? Mitzrayim's not okay. Like all these places are no good. So why Haran specifically? So says the Ksav Sofer, a sharp point. He says not just about Midos Tobos, which is what I think the go-to classic answer is here. He says that when him and Sarah were living in Haran and then left to Eretz Yisrael, who did they take with them? They took Lot, and they took as a nefesh asher asu b'Haran. There was something special and unique about the people of Haran that they were open to being inspired. And that's what we need to be. We need to be people that are open to the inspiration, to not let a moment, a yontif, a holiday pass by without us being inspired. We should allow the people, the situation, the matzav that we're in to inspire us and to help us change for the better, unlike the Lavan at the end of our parsha. Last thought for today comes from the middle of the parsha, when Leah already has several children. The Torah says the following: "Vatera Rachel ki lo." This is the beginning of Perek Lamed. Ki lo yada li Yaakov. Rachel notices and sees that Yaakov, she did not have any children from Yaakov. But tekanei Rachel b'achosa, she became jealous. Right, Tom, right? All what Rachel wanted to do in her life was to have children, to be a mother. All Leah wanted in her life was to be the beloved one of Yaakov. But Tomer al Yaakov, havali banim, give me children. Bim ayin meis anochi, and if not, I'm considered like I am dead. Vayichar af Yaakov b'Rachel. Yaakov gets angry. He gets short with Rachel. And he says to her, Hatachas alokim anochi? Am I in place of God? Asher mina mimech privaten? That I am the one that has denied your ability to have children? Right? So the Farshim are troubled. How can Yaakov say something, right, which sounds so coarse? It sounds so rough. No, how can he say this to her? Is it possible he didn't daven? That's hard to say, right? We understand where Rachel's coming from, because Rachel is very emotional and she's in a lot of pain. She's suffering by the fact that she is unable to have children. This is not a plight or anything that she planned for or wants to be a part of. So one suggestion in understanding this enigmatic, you know, snippet, this vignette in the Torah itself, comes from the Sefer Yagdil Torah, a Sefer that I really, really enjoy. Usually it's Hasidish ideas in it. He doesn't quote anyone for this, so I guess it's the author that writes it, is that sometimes in life, this is from Rav Druk. This is from Yagdil Torah, Rav Druk. He argues is that in order for davening to be effective, we need to know that there's no one else to rely on besides for Hashem. So often we daven, we check the box because we know that's what we have to do. It's the right thing to do. So we daven. But we know that, oh, we could do this, or that person's also davening for me and I have to go check this out. And I gotta go visit that person, and I'm gonna get a bracha from that Rebbe. That ultimately is important, but the one that's davening loses out, because the mindset is that my philos aren't needed completely. So Yaakov wanted to put her in a state where she's gonna say, "Ein hadavar taloi ela bi." It's only me. I'm backed into a corner. And generally, when we're backed into a corner, that's when the tefillos are most effective. Right? So we don't need to get to that point. We can approach davening with that mindset, meirosh, but that's what Rav Druk suggests is what Yaakov is saying. He was being a little bit harsh with her, but purposefully to motivate her, to get her to a place where it's on you. I'm going to daven. I'm not going to stop daven. Ramban says he davened. I'm not going to stop. Chas v'shalom. But understand that you can't rely on me. Your davening needs to be as fervent as possible with your abilities, your skills, and I will do the same. Okay, just to review for today, we learned 5 beautiful ideas in Parsha. We began by what keeps Yaakov up at night. He slept by Harabayas, but he didn't sleep when? Machlokas, before, after, and what is the meaning of that? We discussed the minhag of sleeping on a pillow, maybe with a rock underneath. Why is that connected to Yaakovinu? Has it connected to Tisha B'Av? We discussed the gematria of sulam. Is mamon, is money, And how is that connected to the story here of Yaakov Avinu? You mentioned Vayeshkem Lavan Baboker. Lavan wakes up in the morning and he leaves and they part ways. And there's something powerful there that they were completely unaffected. And if we have people in our lives that we want to connect with, then we shouldn't wait till tomorrow. We should do that today. We should be affected by them. And lastly, we discussed Atachas Elokim Anochi and the harsh reality and reaction of Yaakov to Rachel's plight and plead for him to daven for her. I wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos and a great day.